Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the May 15th. That's right. I had to check the date because I've been up for like, Eric, I'm powering through. I've been up for like 24 hours, feeling great. I could be feeling better though, because I have gone over on every single first basket prop that I bet while on a layover in Michigan. So thanks for nothing. legalized gambling. Anyways, we're going to talk about more ways that you can gamble with the week one schedule. We're going to talk through our favorite bets. Those lines obviously are up. You can bet them now. I promise not to give you any NBA betting advice. And I think Eric is going to swear to that on the USFL as well. It's going to be a fun podcast. Let's rock. Eric, I don't know about you, but when I bet things other than football, I bet like a complete moron. And that was what I've done on the NBA today. So it's miserable. It's miserable. The Phoenix Dallas game just started. I felt really great about my first basket prop. It was going to be Chris Paul three-pointer. And they wanted to get him going early back at home. It's been a bad couple of games for him. DeAndre Ayton is winning tips left and right. In this series, he of course loses the tip. Luka Doncic hits the first shot, so I'm done.
What are the, like, I've never bet those before. I did bet a little bit Milwaukee Bucks with you, partially because my wife and kids mm-hmm. are Bucks fans, so I kind of wanted to watch the game with them, have a little skin in the game. It was nothing big, but losing plus 2.5 in the first half because of that foul on Giannis,
yeah.
You know, and the thing about it is I got lucky, I thought, with a few of those plays because, like, you know, the Bucks took a shot way too early in the shot clock. And then the Celtics went down, took most of the clock, missed, and the rebound happened. I'm like, okay, this is good. We're going. We're fine. We're fine. We're down two. And obviously then Giannis gets the ball poked away and then pokes the ball back away. And then there's a foul and they give him a three-point shot on that. And you sort of knew. What kind of odds do you get for that? What kind of odds do you get for a first basket?
First basket? It depends. So you can bet the exact way that the first basket is scored. So dunk, layup, three-pointer, or other, which is basically a very good way of saying that the mid-range is done in the NBA. They just loop everything else in the other. And so you get some pretty, you know, on the exact way that it's going to be scored, you get some pretty high odds. Like I think my Chris Paul one was, I don't know, 40-1 or something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, hopefully you're not betting that much on those, but yeah, losing them.
Yeah. I mean, I had my rent payment on Chris Paul's hitting three pointer to start the game. Yeah. I do feel it was funny. The Bucks game, obviously they got, absolutely trounced, and you know, you did not foresee Grant Williams turning into Larry Bird in that game, but I did like both underdogs today, and the Mavs I'm sure are going to find a way to blow plus 6.5, but you never know, could happen. They could figure it out. How's the USFL doing for you, by the way?
Horribly. There's no way to sugarcoat it. I had a winning week one, a winning week four, uh-huh. and losing weeks 2-3, and this week I got closing line value in every bet, and I lost I think 3 out of 4 that mattered to me. I actually, in this afternoon's game, I had Houston minus 5.5. They were up 8 with like 6 minutes left, quarterback mm-hmm. fumbles, touchdown, and then actually they go ahead and lose the game. So that was
no privilege. Way.
I also had Philadelphia earlier today, +6. That one, actually, I lost those in my value. That goes +7. And they were up 10 in the second quarter and then gave up 23 straight points and lost. So it hasn't been great. I'm happy, I guess, that, you know, the league's only halfway done, so there's obviously time to improve. But then, like, a huge part of me after a week like this doesn't want to bet it ever again. So we'll see what kind of stick-to-itiveness I have in the next week.
I would support you moving on from the USFL. Not because I don't think you're a quitter, let me be clear. But I think that there are probably things that you can find more joy in. Like golf, for example. This is a nice weekend to transition into golf. You've just started fixing your lawn up. Okay, we'll talk about Get Sunday here in a second. You started fixing your lawn up. Tiger is playing in another major. You had a really nice hypothesis in the Masters. You can continue to use a data-driven approach. You can fade the rubes, and you can pick up a much more, normal sport or real sport than USFL football. That's my gift to you.
Yeah, I might just, it's one of those things where, you know, part of me is thinking, okay, if this were the NFL and I were struggling like this, I probably would keep betting because, you know, I believe in the efficiency of the NFL market. I believe in the efficiency of major markets, college football, even something like the CFL that's been around forever. By the way, they're going through their labor dispute, so we don't know if we're going to have a season this year. But with the USFL, like, I'm getting closing line value on probably 80% of picks, and yet I'm, you know, not even hitting. My strike rate's about 50-50, which after a while you lose the vig or whatever. And the bigger bets that I've placed, which have gotten the more higher closing line value, have lost. So if you were doing that in an NFL season, the markets get more efficient as the season goes on. So you're just unlucky and you're kind of screwed because it's not going to come back around for you because the markets are going to become more efficient as the season goes on. But for a league like this, A, I think the markets are maybe becoming more efficient, but also B, like, I don't think that the market is signaling anything. If I'm continuing to bet into it, I'm continuing to get closing line value and they're not ending up winning. So that's more of a signal to me to quit than to, like, just go into another pretty liquid, pretty efficient market, which is golf.
Very liquid. By the way, the first thing, Tiger is, of course, trending on Twitter. And the first thing that you see if you click on that is Tiger Woods visibly stronger in lead up to the PGA Championship, which I think is hard not to be visibly stronger than what he looked like on Sunday at the Masters after gritting through that. So there you go. I'm sure people will read that and will once again bet on Tiger and only Tiger. So will I. Let's, before we get into week one, remind the people, if you can't go to the PGA Championship where it's being played in Oklahoma, Tulsa, at Southern Hills, if you are looking for a green grass look, okay, that is Masters or shall I say major championship worthy, you need to go check out Get Sunday. Which is, we've talked about this before. Eric has had so much issues with his own lawn. He's been called out by the very people that live in his neighborhood for the ridiculousness of his lawn. Don't be like Eric. Get yourself Major Championship Sunday ready with Get Sunday, which gets your entire garden, your entire lawn ready to rock in less than 15 minutes. It's that easy. You don't need like some elaborate, you know, mixture of bottles and sprays and all this different stuff. It's very easy. It's 15 minutes and then your lawn looks awesome. They have custom plans that include fertilizer and everything you need to get easily to care for your lawn. Feel great about your kids and pets playing around in it. And it's we're offering you 20% off to our listeners and our listeners only. The syndicate gets 20% off to get their lawn looking great. Plans start at just $129. You can get 20% off at checkout when you visit Get Sunday. GetSunday.com/forecast, FORECAST, 20% off at GetSunday.com/forecast. All right, week one lines are here. And I was not here in the country when these were announced, but I was feverishly, like, I was in Europe and, you know, the time change, it was like 6 hours, right? So things are getting announced and it's like very late at night. So I'm sitting there like just trying to get every morsel that I possibly can, hoping that my girlfriend does not throw my phone into the Mediterranean Sea. And it looks to me, what I could glean and now checking over things is that week one in particular has some really cool matchups. Like, I'm very excited about week one, and that's not just including, you know, the opener on Thursday and Sunday night, which I think we did a pretty good job of calling.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I was at the office with our friend, Dave Silfaro, because he messaged me and was like, cause you know, I didn't go in last week because, you know, you and I didn't do the show in the office. And I was like, and he's like, you want to come in Thursday? I'm like, what's Thursday? He's like the schedule release day. I'm like, the hell, you're going in for the schedule release? So I went in, and actually I did the, I did Steve and Sam's podcast, which was interesting, on Thursday morning. So I just stayed in. We went in. I know you don't. So this is like the only good thing about you being out of town. I went to the Eagle because because I know that you don't like that place, but I do. So I went, Dave and I went to the Eagle. And then, like, we come back and I'm just sitting there. I'm firing off tweets about the schedule. Like, you know, the Chiefs open in Glendale. I'm like, the Chiefs open and close the season in Glendale. Send tweet. Or like Detroit, we'll talk about the Lions. Like, this thing's like lining up really well for the Lions this year, right? If you look at everything, and Dave is like kind of a Jared Goff fan, so we're sort of goofing off about that. Then there was like the San Diego Chargers, like ethering every single other team's social media by doing that anime thing. So it was actually what's that?
I didn't even see that. What'd they do?
They made like an anime, of their schedule release. So like most teams, like the Vikings had like John Randall, like yelling it into a camera.
Yeah.
And then the Chiefs had like Andy Reid, like reading it off and like telling fat jokes about himself during it. And then you had like other, and then you had the Falcons one, which is funny because it said Falcons opponents and then 2022. And it's like, it looked like a scoreboard where the Falcons were losing to opponents or schedule or whatever it was, 22-20, which is fitting for them. And then the Chargers made this like elaborate like anime of like all their opponents, and it was freaking hilarious. The most notable one was a picture of like an old guy wearing a pink shirt sitting down at a bar with a Jaguar face on, you know, basically making fun of Urban Meyer grinding up against that like young woman in Columbus after they came to visit Cincinnati.
Oh,
so like
they
did not pull punches. And honestly, like my only response was the Chargers should be able to win games, shouldn't they? Because they do everything else well. They crush like everything. Uniforms are amazing. Stadium's great. It's not even San Diego anymore, but LA is a great city. Coach is awesome. Coach makes great decisions. Quarterback's amazing. Defense has good players, and it never adds up to anything. You know, social media is great. You'd think that they'd add that thing up to something that, you know, ended up being more than just a 9-8 and bowing out of the playoffs.
Yeah. So they are opening on Sunday afternoon, against the Las Vegas Raiders. That might be a good place to start. So what we'll do is we'll run through, the week one games, and we'll spend more time on the ones that we like and sides we like. And by the way, you can go check out on pff.com, you and Ben Brown, who did an admirable job, a wonderful job. You guys did an excellent job.
Did you watch it, George? Did you watch it?
I watched a little bit on my flight while I had Wi-Fi that would actually allow me to stream.
Can you, by the way, I have to make an appreciation here for George. I went through that entire podcast. I think I'm a good host. Like, yeah. I think I do a good job of distributing the ball and making plays. But I blew through that entire thing, did not make one ad read. So I had to do them all at the end.
I mean, I've done that.
You have, but not recently. I mean, you're a lot better at it than I am. So like I came to appreciate, obviously, not just your analysis and your wit, but also your ability to stay on task, which of course I did not there only managed to be, by the way, like maybe one rant about how the Vikings win totals is what it is. But honestly, after running the simulation, I might be a Vikings over better this year. Who knows? I think that things land favorably for them.
That's exciting. We're going to do, now that the schedule's set, I think what we'll do is on Wednesday, we'll go over the simulation results. Now with the schedule set, we kind of now know, you know, who's got the shitty schedule, who's got the cushier schedule in terms of, you know, how much are you, you know, playing on short rest, those kinds of things. So that'll be fun. Let's start though with let's do Raiders Chargers there, which I think is a really interesting game because it's in Los Angeles. The Chargers are favored by 4 points. The Raiders, of course, have Davante Adams now. And I think the interesting thing about this game, Eric, total 52. The interesting thing about this game is there's so many new pieces with the Raiders, and I'm not sure how that's going to look for them to get things started. But I'll tell you what I am confident in. You know what I am confident in? This stadium, while it will be have a Chargers logo in the center of the field, it will be silver and black throughout. I can tell you this right now. It will be silver and black all throughout that stadium. Because while the football, the football Illuminati love the Chargers, okay? That doesn't mean that all of a sudden there are more Chargers fans. Like, that's not how this works.
No, I mean, look, I think actually the Chargers are this great epic battle between the football Illuminati and the football gods, right? There's the almighty being that controls everything, and then there's the Jay-Z and the Beyoncés of the football world that do what they can, let's just say. And, you know, the Chargers last year in Vegas, now the Raiders were banged up. They didn't have Davante Adams. They didn't really have a head coach. Rich Bisaccia did a good job with what he could. But in that Week 18 game, the Chargers were favored by 3, right? And they ultimately come back 2 scores down. They tie the game. The game goes into overtime. And the Vegas Raiders, are prepared to run out the clock, right? I was actually on a Twitter spaces with Rob Bazzoli. Asked me if I could do the fourth quarter of that game. He's like, can you stay for overtime? I'm like, hell yeah, I can stay for overtime. And it was like the best game of the season. And, you know, ultimately the Raiders prevailed. The Raiders have a great kicker, Daniel Carlson, a pretty good quarterback in Carr. It'll be interesting to see what Josh McDaniels. Now that there was the reports that came out this week about the Raiders organization and how they like fired a team president, I want to say, and there were a lot of dysfunction there. This would imply what the Chargers are what? If you make a home field advantage of like 1.5 points, the Chargers are 2.5 points better than them on a neutral. We would
what,
make
what
them.
What were you giving the home field advantage?
1.5.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, so you one think it's just, okay.
So all right. Here's, I'll make this case. I think that the percentage, the vast majority of fans will be Raiders fans. Trip from Las Vegas to Los Angeles is nothing. I mean, it's
you
nothing.
Sound like you would know.
I've made the trip maybe once or twice. I mean, it's nothing. And to be clear, I would say a lot of those, I mean, hell, for Derek Carr and Davante Adams, California is home. That's going to be – I just don't see where the home field advantage is, honestly. Like, let me put it this way. The Chargers players traveling – assuming none of them actually live in Inglewood, the Chargers players are going to travel longer to get to the stadium than the Raiders players are flying into LAX and then going to the stadium. Now, of course, they're all going to fly in – you know, the day before, I would assume both teams are going to stay in hotels the night before because it's impossible to actually
get
to the stadium.
So if you give a home field advantage of nothing, let's say, so that means the Chargers are 4 points better on a neutral. We would make it more like 1.5 points better, like our metrics. But again, the Raiders last season, you know, and somebody got after me on Twitter about this, like, I'm not going to write the dissertation every single fucking time. But here's the thing. The Raiders last year won 10 games, but they had a point differential of a 7-10 team, right? They had them and the Steelers had negative point differential. And teams like the Chargers I believe the Ravens, I got to look back at the Ravens, but like there were teams with better point differentials that had worse records and didn't make the playoffs. So, you know, I think people look at the Raiders and say, oh, they're really improved. You know, we're going to like them because we grade Adams well, we grade Carr relatively well. We're not going to like the Chargers because there are aspects of Herbert's game. I think Herbert's a lot better of a player than we grade him, frankly. So like that's where we are in the teams where we think the Chargers are about a point and a half better on a neutral, which means if you think that home field advantage isn't really good here, you should bet the Raiders. I'm staunchly this season. I think it's because of my view of Josh McDaniel. I think it's because of my view of Herbert and Staley, as well as what I thought was a really good year from Derek Carr last year and possible regression to the mean. I might stay away from this game because I don't believe in the Raiders at all.
Yeah, I'll say this. This was what would scare me about this game. Now, let me be very clear here. The Chargers made some really shiny pickups, right? Khalil Mack, obviously one of them. The Raiders picked up Chandler Jones too. I don't think we should overlook him. The difference would be for me that the Chargers have a much improved offensive line. And if you look over on the right side of the Raiders offensive line, you have Alex Leatherwood, the 80th of 82 graded guards last year, and Brandon Parker, the 76th of 83 graded tackles. And they will be going up against some combination of Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack. And that worries me on a team that is installing a new offense. That said, I think 4 is too many points. I will roll with the Raiders.
Raiders did trade Yannick Ngakoue. They had some defections as well that are going unnoticed. Casey Hayward, I believe, left as well. Yep. I think he went to the Falcons. Edwards, they just traded him. They're not that deep at wide receiver.
Well, so, yes. Yeah, this is true. But Darren Waller is theoretically healthy.
He's healthy again. You know? Yeah. He wasn't having a great year when healthy before he got injured. Like it was a big time volume situation for him. But yeah, okay. Let's move on to the next game.
Let's go to let's start this off with the kickoff game. Buffalo and Los Angeles. So this is in Los Angeles once again. The Rams are a 1-point favorite at home to the Buffalo Bills, who are the Super Bowl favorites. Amazingly so. I think we may be on different sides of this. This is disrespectful as hell. This is super, super disrespectful to the Los Angeles Rams. The defending Super Bowl champion Los Angeles Rams are only a 1-point favorite at home against the Buffalo Bills.
What would the spread of the Super Bowl been had Buffalo made it?
Had Buffalo made it? It was in Los Angeles. I would go probably Rams 2
favor.
In Los Angeles, yeah.
Yeah, I think the same thing about the Rams home field advantage applies. Not the same.
They actually do. They actually have fans. Directionally
similar.
They actually have fans in Los Angeles. The Chargers literally don't have any fans. What would you have made the Super Bowl?
So here's where I would say it. Buffalo and Kansas City last year were about equally yoked. If anything, Buffalo is a little bit better. That game closed in Arrowhead at like 2. Home field advantage in Arrowhead is fairly significant. So let's say Kansas City and Buffalo would be a pick 'em on a neutral. Kansas City was 7-point favorites against Cincinnati at home in the AFC title game. Subtract from that about 2.5 points. So there were 5.5 points. Four and a half points on a neutral against the Bengals. So Buffalo would be 4.5 points better than the Bengals on a neutral. Cincinnati was +4 in the Super Bowl. So Buffalo would have been favored by 0.5 point to 1 point in the Super Bowl. If you sort of go through all those machinations together with me, there's a fair amount of assumptions there. Now, that was with a pretty healthy LA team who has Von Miller, who has Odell Beckham Jr. healthy, who had, you know, who had Andrew Whitworth healthy, who had they didn't have Robert Woods, but then they had Jalen Ramsey. I'm trying to think of going all the way through sort of the machinations there. So like, I think that LA Ram team last year in the Super Bowl is probably better after you subtract, you know, Beckham, after you subtract Von Miller, after you subtract Andrew Whitworth, and you get back Allen Robinson and Troy Hill is basically what they got. Buffalo now, again, the draft pick doesn't matter. It's baked into the market somewhat, but it matters that Buffalo had two draft picks before LA even had one. You know, you have Kahir Elam, James Cook, doesn't matter much to the point spread. And then you have Von Miller, Khalil Shakir at wide receiver. You get Tre'Davious White back healthy, which he wasn't in the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. I think this line, if anything, is giving the Rams too much respect. And
really?
I would bet Buffalo. And the markets, look, if you look at the money line, it's minus 110. Yeah. They're basically giving a point to Buffalo, I think, to entice money. And that 1 point is worth 5 cents on each side. So I actually like Buffalo in this game quite a bit. I think, and again, it's not me hating on the Rams. I'm just trying to add it up for everybody.
Yeah, I just think that's a I think everyone and their mother is going to bet the Bills. For every reason that you just said, the reason that I think that may be jumping out to a little bit of a few conclusions too early. And the reason for that would be, look, the Rams did, say what you want about how they won it, they did win the Super Bowl at home. I mean, you know, at home, whatever. They're playing at home as the Super Bowl champions on kickoff weekend against a team that is traveling across the country who is somehow, and I love the Bills, this is not me hitting on the Bills at all, but is somehow the Super Bowl favorite this year, which to me, I think is a little, we've talked about this before, is just a little ridiculous given the AFC. And last year, yes, that Chiefs game, I think we all remember that game. We remember them blowing the tar, beating the crap out of the New England Patriots, but they also were a super up and down team. Not a lot of consistency. Not all of us, but some of us remember that Jacksonville game. And the Rams, yes, they lose Von Miller. That is a big loss. Yes, the Bills actually pick him up. That is a big get for them. But I think the Allen Robinson pickup is going to be really great. I think the fact that they're playing, you know, as a Super Bowl champion on kickoff weekend has to count for something here. And I actually think there will be – now, Buffalo fans travel really, really, really well. That would be my biggest concern. But unlike the Chargers, the Rams did just win the Super Bowl. There are LA fans that are Rams fans. I do think they will show up here. That's my take.
I think you addressed a couple of things interestingly that are obviously very correlated with each other, but are different. I think Buffalo is the best team in the AFC. I also think that they are the favorites to win the Super Bowl, but I don't necessarily think that the degree to which they're favorites, which is they're 6-1, Kansas City's 10-1. That difference is almost entirely due to, I think, one thing, and that's that Buffalo's schedule, while not being easy, it's not an easy schedule. The rest differential stuff is actually relatively favorable to the Chiefs. It's more favorable to Buffalo. And when you look at, you know, the path to supremacy in the AFC, it's going to be really hard for a team from the AFC North, where there's Cleveland, Cincinnati, Baltimore, or from the AFC West, where there's Kansas City, and I'm going to piss off Oakland fans here, Kansas City, Los Angeles Chargers, and Denver Broncos. Like, though, the team that wins the North or the West is probably not going to get the one seed because of a very similar thing that happened last season, which was, you know, there's easy divisions. There's the South and there's the East. And, you know, I think that the Buffalo Bills, by virtue of the fact that they can sort of stomp out the Jets, the Patriots, and the Dolphins, will win the one seed in the AFC more easily than an equally yoked Kansas City team, LA Chargers, Denver Broncos, Cincinnati Bengals, and Baltimore Ravens, Cleveland Browns, if you want to mention them too. So that's my point. I think that the gap between them and the next best AFC team is smaller than the gap between the Super Bowl odds that they have and the next best Super Bowl odds team for that reason.
That makes sense. At least we found something that we disagreed on, though. I guess this makes me a part of the Ramley. Is that how this works?
The Ramley, yep. Well, you're from LA anyway.
There you go. let's go to the team that I actually root for. This is the starting now Sunday, 1 o'clock. The San Francisco 49ers, it seems like they do this now every year. They go start out on the East Coast. I guess some people call Chicago Midwest. I still don't understand that at all.
Chicago is the central time zone.
So yeah, central somehow. Cincinnati's Eastern time zone, Chicago central time zone. Makes a ton of sense. The Niners are a 6.5-point favorite in Chicago against the Bears. Let me at total 42.5. Let me ask you this. Does this, in your opinion, tell you anything about the market's view, how they view the starting quarterback for the Niners?
No. This is entirely how horrid the Bears are going to be.
Yeah.
When I first ran the numbers and I saw this number, I was like, Ben, we got to rerun the numbers because I forgot to put the tank variable next to the Bears. The Bears aren't tanking on purpose. Nominally, they're not tanking on purpose. They have a young quarterback and all that stuff. But like for as far as the talent of their roster, they're tanking. That is the difference, I think, between where we have. So we have San Francisco about 2.5 points better than the average team on a neutral. We have the Bears about 5 points worse than the average team on a neutral. So you throw in home field advantage, that's where you get the point spread for this game. I don't think I can bet either side. For similar reason, you know, last year when San Francisco went on the road and faced Detroit, which is in the Eastern time zone, but still a Midwest city somehow, they kind of really killed the Detroit Lions, but then the Lions showed, as they did all year, the pluckiness to come back and cover the closing line. I think similarly about this game where you have Justin Fields. You know, Justin Fields can do some things with his legs. The Niners, to your point on the last podcast that you and I were on together, like didn't do a ton to address the secondary after Charvarius Ward. Mm-hmm. You know, they're also not like that effective of a run game. We all talk about how Elijah Mitchell was great last year. Like Elijah Mitchell actually like above expectations, but not the greatest. We also looked at the NGS data. Linebackers moved on run plays against the Niners the least amount in the league. I think that's a cool thing for Shanahan to sort of hang his hat on. Rams for second, which tells you how bad the running backs for the Rams are too. So I just don't think you can lay a touchdown with the Niners on the road, even if the Bears, which I believe is true, are going to be one of the bottom three teams in the league.
I wouldn't lay a touchdown, but it's 6.5. Let me tell you what's going to happen in this game. Justin Fields last year. What did Justin Fields do last year that we expected to happen that ended up happening? He held on the ball for freaking ever, right? Over 3 seconds average time to throw. What is the strength of the San Francisco 49ers that only got stronger in the draft? Their defensive line. Let me tell you who is starting at left tackle for the Chicago Bears. Tevin Jenkins, PFF pass block grade of 54.6 last year. At right tackle starting is Larry Borum, PFF pass block grade of 62.7. Both of those, very, very bad. Okay. Not good at all. The other thing that I would point out is there is absolutely no one, whether it's Trey Lance or Jimmy G, and I have a sneaking suspicion it could be Jimmy G, there is no one on this planet that is covering George Kittle, but no one in Chicago for sure that is covering George Kittle. And I just think the Bears are going to be getting destroyed. And when you think about how they come back in this game, I could see this being something where, like, Justin Fields gets sacked like 10 times in this game. Like, I am worried about the Bears. So I actually like 6.5. I really also like 42.5. The Niners are going to come out and just run over this team. I mean, this team stinks. They are really not good.
Sounds like you could tease the Niners down to 0.5 points.
You could.
And find some other games.
I don't even know if I'm going to need to, though, at 6.5. I don't know which one I like more, over 42.5. Or -6.5, because I like your point around, I think the Niners come out here and, you know, just steamroll. And then maybe they pull their, you know, their foot off the gas and Chicago, you know, finds a way to score some points late. By the way, right now, do you think it's going to be Trey Lance or Jimmy G?
Trey Lance. I think it's not like 90-10 though. I think it's like 70-30.
I tend to agree.
If he's on the roster and he beats him out, like they're not playing him. I just think Jimmy G kind of sucks. Like, I don't know. I've done ring around the rosy with the takes on Jimmy G. Jimmy G throws what's called, which is a good trait. Good job, Jimmy G. He's bad at, like, if any other quarterback got those same calls and threw them, they'd be better. So that's bad for Jimmy G, right? But Trey Lance, if he doesn't even throw what's called, right, then Shanahan's going to hate him, and there's going to be some issues.
I concur with you. Okay, so there are a few really good games left. Let's make sure we get to those. And let's go to your Kansas City Chiefs playing the Arizona Cardinals, 425. This is in Arizona. The Arizona Cardinals are +3 at home, total of 53. What do you make of this one?
I can't go to the Chiefs fast enough. Lay 3. I know it's -115, right? It's expensive now to lay Chiefs here. It was 2.5 on the open, so the smart money has gone to them, at least to the extent that they're smart money this time of year. The Cardinals, well, we haven't given the Cardinals a lot of attention, and I think for rightly so. They were sort of the same team every year for the Cliff Kingsbury era. So if you're a Jets fan, you're thinking, why have these two bozos focused just on the Jets? Or if you're a Raiders fan, same thing, Rams. The Cardinals were the biggest fraud in the NFL last year. And I think that it comes down with a thud this year. No DeAndre Hopkins in week one, right? AJ Green, I think, is coming back. Hollywood Brown, I know that they gave up, like, or they got back a pick from the Ravens, but let's just talk about the 23rd pick. That was an egregious trade to take him on for a low 20s draft pick. They re-signed, like, they were doing silly things, the Cardinals. And they have two linebackers in Zaven Collins and Isaiah Simmons who, like, don't know what they're doing. And, you know, Andy Reid's going to be in his first, like, you know, game with the new offense. He's going to want to prove that, the last 5 or 6 years was just not Tyreek Hill. I mean, I don't know how – and Patrick Mahomes never lost a game inside. So I think that this is going to be like an overs on Patrick Mahomes game. I think this is going to be a Chiefs laying 3, getting after the passer with George Karlaftis, Chris Jones. I can't look, and I know this is the famous last words, but 3 is way too short.
Yeah, the problem without Hopkins, and the other issue is, the interior of the Cardinals offensive line, not great. Players with sub 65 PFF grades, two with sub 60 PFF grades. And so you count, the fact that Murray will be without his number one target, with the fact that you have Chris Jones over there on the other side. And then this is equally as worrisome. Actually, I think more worrisome. The cornerbacks for the Arizona Cardinals are horrendous. Okay. I mean, it is not good for them. They do not have a single corner projected to start with a PFF grade over 60. So, and two below 50. So when you think about how this game is going to play out, I tend to agree with you, even though I hate agreeing with you there. And I like Chiefs -3 on the road as well.
I promise. Well, that's a 4 o'clock game. You will be long gone by then. Back to the apartment. You might have to catch the last hour if you come into the office before SNF. I will not be obnoxious in front of you for that game, but I will be obnoxious. Like, look, they open and close the season in Glendale. That's all you need to know.
All you need to know. Okay, let's go your other favorite team, the Minnesota Vikings. Vikings are home. They're playing the Packers. This is also a 425 game. Vikings +1.5. Total is 49 on the money line. Packers are -120. and the Vikings are plus 100. This was interesting to me because what is this line if the Packers have Davante Adams? Is this three?
I don't know. Because last year at Metrodome, the Packers were only laying one, right? We picked them as lock of the week. And like, to Kirk Cousins' credit, the guy balled, right? The guy like was out there throwing, you know, making plays. And, you know, my guy MBS went for 70 to tie the game at the end. And it was a shoot. It was a good old fashioned shootout. The one game that I think of here is week one of 2020. When in a pandemic emptied stadium, the Vikings were favored by 2.5 and the Packers laid the smackdown on them because the defense for Minnesota was so horrendous. Adams obviously moves this number. I don't know if he moves it out to 2.5, but this is a situation where I think a lot of us intuitively believe, oh, the Packers have won 13 games the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. The Minnesota Vikings are about as average as a team in the NFL can be. Green Bay's on the road. They're inside. Rodgers, you know, should thrive in those conditions, et cetera, et cetera. And we think, oh, Packers big here. And the market almost always gives the Vikings a lot of credit in situations like these. Interestingly, the Vikings are only two. They're 1.5-point dogs at home to Green Bay. The following week on Monday Night Football, they're 2.5-point dogs to the Eagles on the road. So like, that shows you, and the market really, and again, there's home and road and all that kind of stuff, but that does show you sort of how condensed the NFC is, even as one of the top teams versus one of the middling teams. Yeah. I think if anything, you have to lay it with Green Bay here only because of a few things. I think everybody's looking at the Packers and saying it's going to be a big time adjustment for them. No Adams, you know, more of a power running game, lean on the offensive line, lean on the running backs. Defense looks like a murderer's row of players, by the way. Mm. The Vikings, though, breaking in a new head coach, breaking in a new defensive coordinator. And, you know, again, I hate to, like, I think Kirk Cousins is the best thing they have going in this game because the offensive line is still not very good. The receivers are great with Jefferson, but they're not a lot of depth. And on defense, you're not good talent-wise. And you have a new defensive coordinator who I think everybody's baking into the cake that he's going to be better than Zimmer was, but that's a long shot. So if I'll lay the 1.5, but there's huge uncertainty here, especially because Cousins at his best can play games with Rodgers.
I agree. I will not be betting the Vikings plus 1.5. I will 100% be teasing the Vikings out to plus 7.5, probably with the Colts down to 1.5 against the Texans on the road. Because that's the only other game that crosses 7-3. And here's the reason for this. Davante Adams was the most targeted player in the NFL last year as a percentage of total targets for his team. And there's a reason for that. He's always freaking open. Like, what do you do with those 15 times that you're going to throw Davante Adams the ball? And you're like, wait, who's open? And you are hoping that Christian Watson comes in and turns into Davante Adams. Like, that ain't happening. Like, I hate to even break that to you, but Davante Adams, when he came in, it took Davante Adams a few years. Like, people don't just come in and have synergy with Rodgers. So is it Alan Lazard? You know, because the weakness for the Vikings, certainly on the defensive side, requires receivers on the same page with Rodgers. I could very much see that. I think the Packers are going to come out and run the ball here. And at home, in a situation where you've got Kirk Cousins now, like, I want to be clear. I don't know that the new Vikings regime is going to light the world on fire, but positive regression on the offensive side of the ball is going to happen. Like, Kirk Cousins in that offense is going to be solid. And he's got now Adam Thielen back healthy. I know they're not deep, but this is the first game of the season. Jefferson and Thielen healthy is going to be tough to deal with. And you look at Smith and Gary there and Kenny Clark on the interior.
That's Wyatt, something Devon Wyatt.
That's something you're worried about. But the play action game that the Vikings are going to throw at them is going to mitigate that a little bit more than it normally would. And so for that reason, I very much like the Vikings here.
George, I'm going to make an executive move here. Yeah. We'll talk about the rest of the week one games as well as the schedule on Wednesday. We got to talk about this though. Drew Brees, 52 minutes ago on Twitter, said, despite speculation from the media about my future this fall, I'm currently undecided. I may work for NBC. That's news to NBC, I think, by the way. Mm-hmm. I may play football again.
Whoa.
I may focus on business and philanthropy. Now, good work on that, by the way, Drew. I may train for the pickleball tour, senior golf tour, coach my kids, or all of the above. I'll let you know.
Wait, all of the above. So he might work for NBC and play football. That's how you know that tweet wasn't well thought out. I'm glad that you noticed that because I kind of wanted to talk about this. Drew Brees was predictably not good in the booth. Like, this was predictable, right?
Well, okay, back up. Let's back this thing up, okay? All right. We have been spoiled by people, by Tony Romo, like a couple people. A, Chris Collinsworth, our boss, who's tremendous in the booth, has also, Chris Collinsworth has been in the booth since like 1991 or something, right? He retired from football in 89 after not making the Bengals that year, went straight to HBO. He's been honing this craft for like 30 years. And he also has like an army of PFF people to help him. So like, there's a ton of reasons why Chris is the best. And a lot of them have to do with Chris, and a lot of them have to do with the time he spent and the hard work he puts in and all that.
And he has a good personality that's like, and he's got a good personality.
He's delightful. But you know, the same thing with Troy Aikman. Troy Aikman's got like, and I've been part of a group that's helped Aikman during the broadcast. Like he's got people helping him. He's been in the, like, Chris and Troy were next to Joe Buck in like the early 2000s in a three-man group. Like, they've been doing this for a long time.
So you're giving Drew Brees a pass here?
I'm not giving Drew Brees a pass. I'm saying we signed Brady to this humongous deal at Fox, right? Mm-hmm. And we Tony Romo comes in, and the guy's got a great personality. The bar's also super low because, I'll say this. Tony Romo is extremely entertaining. I don't think he's like the greatest football analyst from like a tactical perspective. I think every once in a while he falls ass backwards into some good takes. And then he has some kind of, frankly, like he has great intuition. Like when after the Bucks Chiefs game in the regular season, he's like, I think this is the Super Bowl. Like that's great intuition. But like there are other, like he also bats about 500 on the calls pre-snap. And when he hits them, we're like, oh my God. And then he doesn't know half the people's names. And like, and he's been at it now for 5 years. It's crazy to think about. Drew Brees coming in and being like, never do it. Like he did some college games, right? He did Notre Dame, I believe, right? Like how many games does he have in his belt? Like 10?
Yeah, I guess I'm not trying. So the word on the street is, and this is not me knowing anything on the inside. This is me reading. I think I was from Pro Football Talk or whatever. Was that Brees
wanted the great to call. Stakes? The great stake craftsman.
Look, I'll just say this: if you are not a professional, don't post your food online. It doesn't look good. It may taste good. It may actually be cooked well. It ain't gonna look good. So just don't do it. You're ridiculous. By the way, that picture of steak did not turn out super well, and probably wasn't cooked well either. But was that Brees wanted to call more games. And they were like, hey, man, like, that's actually, you need to go do Football Night in America and, like, figure this thing out. Because the Bengals Raiders game, which is the playoff game that he did here, was not good. that was not a good showing for him. And he needs to kind of, like, season it up a little bit. But the problem with Brees, and the reason I knew, or not knew, but, like, the reason I wasn't super bullish on this, was when have you ever said Drew Brees, man, I just, that guy's personality is.
I love hearing him talk. Yeah.
Like there's no. Nothing.
No. And here's the thing. He better not come back and play because Brett Favre had a hose. Okay. And so if he lost 10% of it, the guy still had a howitzer out there, right?
Who's signing Drew Brees right now?
Like Carolina, maybe? The Carolina actually has money. Like, they could do it.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of embarrassing to have Darnold sitting on the bench, $18 million.
Man, that'd be something.
Just drafted Corral in round three. And then, hey, Drew, come in. That roster's dreadful. That's the worst team in the NFL, I think, if they don't sign him. But also, like, Brees is cooked. He was cooked in 2020.
Yeah.
The guy, like, what would be the purpose of signing Drew Brees? It would be to win a Super Bowl. By the time you get to week 20 of the season, the guy can't throw deep. Like, that's been true for 5 years. And standing next to Tony Dungy and Steve Kornacki at the NBC booth, if it's not going to increase your arm strength.
If you sign him, you like, I legitimately think you can't sign him until like week 10. You know, like, you can't trot him out there week one and expect it to work out.
Yeah, if a guy gets hurt in like at week 12 or whatever, you need a guy to come in and check the ball down, whatever. Yeah. I would say, like, the thing also, like, there was a high profile like game that Chris did early in his career for Notre Dame football, where he made some mistakes. There was also a time where he called the Boomer Esiason game. And if anyone remembers, Boomer was Chris's quarterback and he was critical of Boomer. And like, there was like hubbub over that. And now Chris is the best broadcaster there is. And I think like, we have to be careful about, you know, cause like, think about how bad Jason Witten was. Like, Jason Witten was horrible. And like, he took that toupee off and he went right back into the field. And he knew that that wasn't his career. And it's okay if Drew does that. I also think our expectations, like, he should be calling Mac games.
Yeah.
But he's just not going to be calling Mac games because he's too high profile. You think Tom Brady's going to call a Western Michigan game?
Okay.
But that's like how you
do you think Tom Brady's going to be good in the booth?
I don't, but like.
Really?
No. I mean, I think he'll say some insightful stuff. I think he'll be bored. I think like he's going to be like. Maybe I'm wrong because
I think he's good. So I think he's going to be good. Here's why I think he's going to be good. My opinion is that Tom Brady, here's the reason that Chris is the best at what he does. He works harder than anyone else. A lot of people at PFF work really, really hard. Chris is up there at the top. Like, the dude works his ass off. To be comfortable enough in the game to have a conversation. The way he and Al talk about what they do is they're like, this is us having a conversation on the couch about the game. But to do that, you have to be so confident. You have to know all the players. You can't think through things. It has to be natural. Tom Brady, in my opinion, will approach this the way that it should be approached, which is a really hard to do job. I'm pretty sure Drew Brees, Tony Romo came out and they're like, hey, man, I've been grinding for a while. Now I'm just looking for something to, you know, show up on Sunday, rip it up and, you know, be done with it and collect a nice little paycheck here. Tom Brady ain't doing that. Tom Brady's coming in. He's making $375 million. He's coming in for blood. Like, to me, he is coming in to do this as well as he possibly can. Here's my question. We know he doesn't run his social media. Half the reason we think Tom Brady is so damn endearing is because his social media game is hilarious. He has a team, like, they've written articles about this. He had a team like 10 people. Like, they formed their own social media consulting company because of how successful it is. But you know what? I think they can still support him in game.
Yeah.
You get a little Slack chat open. You're texting Tom Brady some jokes. Tom Brady's going to fire those off. Tom Brady's going to be ready for that. I think he's going to be really good in the booth because I think he's just going to be so damn prepared.
I think those are the only two outcomes, right? I think the only, I don't think he's going to be average at it. I think that the you're right. I think there was the reports, right? Brees told Peyton, he's like, look, I have to work. Like, I don't work that hard. I get paid this much and it's a good gig if you can get it. And like, obviously, you know, his performance in the booth like showed, right? And I guess my issue is going to be these guys are uber competitive, right? And the question I have is if there's no like win or loss and there's no championship and there's no X, Y, and Z, and you're already like, the thing is, the difference between Brady's football career and Brady's future broadcasting career was Brady, when he was drafted by the NFL, was a sixth round pick, pick 199. He had to spend all career proving that. He's the number one overall pick, making the number one overall pick money as a broadcaster. And so, like, there might not be that chip on his shoulder to prove, like, there, the what you described is perfectly plausible and perfectly possible. My thought is, like, what if he's not driven by this, oh, everybody thinks I'm going to suck, or no one believes in me? It's like, well, very clearly, like, an entire network believes in you because they're paying you 10 years, almost $400 million. So that's the other side of it. And the fact that broadcasting is competitive, but not in the same way that I think playing football is competitive.
I agree. It'd be interesting. Let's talk real quick about the one last really good game, which is Brady's Bucks Sunday night, as was predicted on this show, that Sunday night football would have Brady's Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And this is going to be a hell of a ratings game because it's in Dallas and they're playing the Cowboys. Cowboys are plus 2.5. I will say really quickly my thoughts on this game. Dallas and their offense looked not great down the stretch last year.
Yep.
Losing Amari Cooper is going to hurt them. It is going to hurt them. There are going to be some question marks with that offense. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, with Tom Brady coming back, 2.5-point favorites. Last year, we talked about this game, and we talked about how Tom Brady was going to, you know, take advantage of Micah Parsons at linebacker, and he did, and they finally put Micah Parsons as a pass rusher, and he was amazing, maybe the best defensive player in the NFL. I think Tom Brady is going to have his way here once again. The fact that it's less than 3, I love Brady in the spot.
Yeah, this teasable in the point spread sense, 2.5 up to 8.5, you go through 3 and you go through 7. Total at 51.5 makes that a little bit harder. Last year, the total on opening night was 52 and it went over. The spread on opening night in Tampa, granted, and with, remember the questions about Dak's shoulder. Remember everybody was talking about how Dak's arm wasn't prepared for opening night and so on and so forth. That was out to 9, that point spread. And of course, Dallas lost by 2 on a last second Brady drive. Dak was terrific in that game. But you're right. I mean, Dallas has atrophied some this offseason. Other teams and the NFC East are catching up to them. Tampa, though, you have to be careful, right? So Tampa, you know, without Jordan Whitehead, Ndamukong Suh might come back, but maybe not. I think Pierre Paul is also a free agent. They went with Logan Hall in the draft with their first pick at pick 33. And then, you know, you had Ali Marpet leave. You had the Chris Godwin injury. The Antonio Brown, obviously not on the team anymore. So I think both teams have lost some pieces, which is why maybe this point spread has shrunk, even from the neutral site spread it was on opening night of 2021.
Yeah, I understand exactly, you know, what you're saying there. Like, you look at the Cowboys, and I mean, let's just look at their tackles real quick. You've got Terrence Steele over there at right tackle. Like, you're going to put Shaq Barrett on him, and you're going to let Shaq Barrett go to work over there. And you're going to make Dak Prescott feel that pressure all game long without what has been his number one target. Now, I get that CeeDee Lamb ranked 8th in the NFL last year, and I said CeeDee Lamb is a guy that you have to have in the conversation for top 5 at his position. 100%, he was amazing. But it's going to be different now that he doesn't have Amari Cooper over there. It just is. And look, last year we said, hey, Tom Brady's going to take advantage of Micah Parsons. I think Tom Brady's going to take advantage of Trayvon Diggs in this game. Trayvon Diggs coming off of that amazing interception year, but his aggressiveness paid the price on the other side. And so, I don't know, for that reason, I'm rolling. If this stays less than 3, I'm rolling with our Bucks. Our Bucks.
Very good. By the way, there is some gambling Twitter drama going on right now, which is kind of funny. The Mavericks have opened up what appears to be a pretty large lead against the Suns.
It's like 30, right? Yeah.
And our friend who has hosted some shows that we've been on, but also just like a very funny Twitter persona, Joey Knish,
Yep.
I believe his first name is actually Joey, but his last name's not Kanish. That's a character from Rounders, of course. He tweets, Dallas fires Haralabob. Haralabob, by the way, a very, very, very successful NBA bettor.
Haralabob Vulgaris, who is a great follow on Twitter because he, I don't know if he still bets, but he still does all of the analysis and has.
He also has tastes that would make yours blush, George. The kind of scarves he bought, what he spends on a scarf.
Let me be clear. You will not catch me dead spending money on a scarf. Okay.
But the price tag, of course he's loaded because he made all his money betting totals in NBA, CFL. Guy's extremely sharp. Mavericks hired him to work in their front office. Apparently the rumors that are like he and Luka didn't get along and all this kind of stuff. And so Joey Kanish, shots fired, says Dallas fires Haralabob, makes Luka happy, trade away the guy Haralabob wanted in Porzingis, hires a head coach Haralabob would never have signed off on in Jason Kidd. And now they're in the Western Conference Finals. You won't read it in the Dallas Morning News, but that's what happened. To which I love the banter about this, because it is like sort of the one example that sports bettors have consulted for teams for a long time. I think Haralabob's been the most high profile and in most high profile position. But it was very, very funny tweet by our friend Joey.
Do you think he's just fucking around, or do you think that's
I don't know. Do you spend any time in gambling Twitter? Now we are, I think, we're on the fringes. We have friends in gambling Twitter, we have enemies in gambling Twitter. If you spend any time in gambling Twitter, there are people who are super competitive there. I remember I bet a UFC bet last night. Martin Carlisle, one of our employees, has a model. It's done pretty well. And he had one bet last night. He tweeted it. I retweeted. Somebody in gambling Twitter comes in when it lost, because of course it lost this week. And he just goes, L. And I think there is this competitive nature, and these markets are competitive, right? Like ultimately, you're betting against the sports book, but you are betting the numbers are made up by the price discovery of other bettors, right? And through the process of price discovery, through the bets that other bettors make. And so if you beat the closing line, in a way you are winning the battle. Now, you have to beat the closing line repeatedly and over a big sample and in a liquid sport and all that kind of stuff to win long term. But ultimately, it's a competitive game. And so the fact that competitiveness spills over into Twitter is I think, just an accurate representation of what sports betting is. But it's really funny to me.
Yeah, I wish I had spent I wish I had more time to dig into the Haralabob Dallas stuff, because it's super weird to me that I want to know the genesis of why he and Luka didn't get along. The rumor is that Luka didn't like, and I think it's funny because everyone sees Luka and it's like, this like young kid who, oh, this guy is young, so he should like analytics and all this stuff. Apparently Luka hated that Haralabob would come in and basically say, hey, here's what you've got to do, because like the analytics say these things. And Luka was like, F you, I'm the one out here playing the game. You have no idea what you're talking about. And, basically get off my lawn. And that was how things soured. I find it interesting that he says that that Jason Kidd was a coach that Haralabob would never have hired. That is interesting to me, because I don't understand why that's the case. I think Jason Kidd, by all accounts is a, smart progressive who was a great player, like all his players like him. So that doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
It's also interesting because in our own sport, football, like we have actually one example now. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah was not a sports bettor. He was a trader prior to joining the 49ers and the Browns and now being the general manager of the Vikings. But, and some people wonder if these are all Kwesi's decisions, but through the grapevine, the Jim Harbaugh thing was all Kwesi. Like, he wanted Jim Harbaugh. And then obviously he got to hire Ryan Grigson. Now, Jim Harbaugh and Ryan Grigson are two men who I do not associate with analytics. Like, I don't think they're stupid or anything, but I don't associate them with analytics. I actually think that, like, you know, somebody like Kwesi and possibly somebody like Haralabob would want to balance the room a little bit. And Kwesi Adofo-Mensah has acted that way as the general manager of the Vikings, to his credit.
Yeah. Anyways, we could dig into basketball and gambling Twitter for a while. We will not do that on this podcast. We will spend more time on the other week one games. If you want to know how we feel about them, though, go to pff.com and check out the article that Eric and Ben wrote last week. They go over every single game. There are some other good ones out there. Our Jets playing the Ravens. Some other good games I'm looking at right now. Patriots Dolphins is a good one. Steelers Bengals. That's it. That's 6.5.
That's a big one. I think the Ravens, now it didn't work last year against the Raiders, but like the Ravens and their annual go on the road and kick the shit out of a team. that's not that good.
Especially with chip on their shoulder.
The Bengals one's interesting. I was on a local station this morning and I said, look, you got to, I mean, this has Super Bowl hangover written all over it. So be careful before laying the touchdown with the Bengals, I would say.
Yes, that is true. Now, in true fashion, I managed to bungle all the ad reads just like you did. So here's what we're going to do. I want you to think about your favorite 3 week one bets, okay? While I tell everyone about how to play best ball the best way possible, and we're going to give out your three favorite bets right after this.
Okay.
The best place to go play fantasy football this summer is Underdog Fantasy. It's not even close. Their Best Ball Mania tournament has $10 million in total prize money. And the best part is you just draft a fantasy football team and that's it. You don't have to do waivers, trades. You don't have to start sit fiasco. You're trying to figure out who to start and who to sit. Your wife is yelling at you because you need to go grocery shopping. The baby's crying and the dog needs to walk. All that shit gone. Just draft a team, draft well, and you could win a boatload of cash. The champion of Best Ball Mania last year drafted in June. So there's no time like the present. Join Underdog and take your shot at $1 million draft. Plus, Underdog is going to double your first deposit up to $100 when you sign up with the promo code PFF. It's very simple. Go sign up. Use promo code PFF. Also, if you play 10 of those dollars using promo code PFF, you get a free PFF subscription. This is the best deal I've ever heard of. I can't believe how are they doing this? So I don't know what you're waiting for. Head to underdogfantasy.com or go to the App Store, download their app. It's very, very good. Play $10 with code PFF. Draft your Best Ball Mania team today. Get your free PFF subscription. It'll take care of all of your fantasy needs, all of your betting needs as well. And by the way, if you don't like playing best ball, that's not your thing, you can still get a great deal on PFF subscription with 25% off using promo code Forecast. So all those things are there for you at Underdog Fantasy on their app or underdogfantasy.com with promo code PFF. Okay, your three favorites in week one are what?
Okay, let's go. Buffalo plus one against the Rams. That's I love that one. The next one is going to be Dallas Cowboys plus 8.5, teased with the Indianapolis Colts minus 1.5 in Houston, teasing through 7, teasing through 3 in both cases. By the way, find books that you can get you minus 110, usually with paper heads, especially if you're going to tie up your money this long. And then lastly, look, the roar is going to be restored this year. They have not won a division title since 1993. They have not played a playoff game at home since it was the Pontiac Silverdome and Brett Favre was starting his first career playoff game. They're in a division with the Packers, the Vikings, the Bears. Bears are going to be terrible. Vikings are going to be average. Packers could slide. 4-1 to make the playoffs. That's the best bet on the board right now. But plus 4 in week one, your Detroit Lions at home against the Eagles. It's going to be a letdown spot for the Eagles. Everybody's buying into the Eagles. I think they win outright.
You hate to show up in a letdown spot, which is apparently what the Phoenix Suns did in game 7 of the NBA playoffs. So I'm with you on a few of those. We've talked about them. There you go. So you can get ready with some week one action. We'll be back on Wednesday. We love you. We thank you for hanging out with us. For George and Eric, we'll see you guys next time. Peace.